guys. Thank you for tuning in. It's great to have you with us. My name is Henrik. This is Red Ice TV. We are also, of course, as usual, have a radio version of this available if you so prefer. But do know that if you go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Red Ice Radio, you can see the video version of this show as well. So we have Nathan Demago back on the show today. We're actually going to talk about Berkeley and the just the complete mayhem, really, which has unfolded in Berkeley in the last three events that's taken place there. The riots, the complete just disregard by the cops, the way that they just have stood down the last three times. It's absolutely amazing. But, you know, let me just preface by saying that Berkeley has, you know, interestingly, obviously, here's where the free speech movement started. A lot of these, you know, early fights in the 60s, if you will, took place in Berkeley. And now, 2016, 2017, the anti-communist, like, just conglomerate, all these different various groups have gotten together to finally push back in this culture war. And it's very interesting that it takes place at Berkeley. But Nathan, thank you for coming back on the show. It's great to speak with you again. Hope you're doing well.
I am, actually. Thanks for having me on. And definitely ready to talk about this and just give everyone the entire rundown of everything that's happened starting several months ago, all the way up till perhaps even the last event that we had, which actually was held, I would say, somewhat successfully. And the cops finally did their job. But just thanks for having me on. And hopefully we can spend the next hour or two going through all of this for anyone who is trying to make sense of out of the chaos.
Yeah, it is chaotic. And I think, what is it? Is it like, was it three events in total? I mean, it depends on when we go back to. We had the Milo event, I think, was the really big one where the violence really just spiraled out of control. But I believe there was a couple before that, because remember, we did that live stream. Remember the fight with Berkeley, right? I mean, that didn't turn violent, but that was Identity Europa. Spencer was there and we covered it live. That was Berkeley, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a year ago in March, and that was even before Richard Spencer or myself had really broken through into the mainstream, and we were able to hold an event within and make it publicly known about 48 hours prior. We were aware of who Antifa was at that time, and we did not want to give them a lot of time to organize. And I would actually say that I believe that perhaps a large amount of this violence that has occurred may perhaps even be due to the inroads that we have been making in Berkeley and throughout the Bay Area over the last year since I launched Identity Europa with several other people. This seems to be ground zero for not only Identity Europa, but also, in my opinion, and from kind of what we've been studying about the anarcho, like communist elements in America, it seems to be ground zero for both sides. So I think that this violent overreaction by Antifa for people who aren't even really alt-right may perhaps even been in a way influenced by our presence on the ground at Berkeley, putting up flyers, talking to students, and both at Berkeley and around the Bay Area and in Northern California in general. I think we could actually start, though, not at Berkeley, but at UC Davis. If anyone remembers that the Milo event at UC Davis was shut down even prior to the one that occurred at Berkeley, where they were they lit a generator on fire and they were smashing windows. They actually shut down an event at UC Davis about a month prior to that I was at. And CNN was there. They covered it. I had an excellent interview with them during it. I actually was surprised they shut it down, because it really wasn't that violent. And the cops could have, in my opinion, maintained order at the UC Davis event. There were probably only about 50 to 60 protesters. I would say only a handful of them were actually getting violent at the UC Davis event, but they weren't really getting violent in the sense that they weren't really attacking anyone. I did get hit a couple times with like a sticker or something like that that someone walked up and put on my face. But most of it was they were just kind of tearing down the plastic barricades they had. They didn't even put up the actual metal barricades that they usually put up for these situations. They had these flimsy plastic ones, which was, in my opinion, a grave error on the part of whoever was running security. But I would say it actually goes back to that at the UC Davis event. And I think they were further emboldened by their success there in managing to shut down Milo's event. And so I would say we could probably trace a lot of this back to UC Davis, maybe even Sacramento with BAM. And we all are well aware of BAM now, and Yvette Falarca, who was actually seen there in Sacramento assaulting a man right in front of cops. The cops literally were just standing there watching her do this, and it took a mob of people dragging this man probably about 15, 20 feet before the cops even stepped in. And BAM has been behind this. Each one of these events, BAM has really just been behind it. The one at UC Davis, the one at the Berkeley Milo event. They actually had a rally the day of the inauguration that I was at, that I covered for you guys. I was able to get an interview with one of the individuals from the Berkeley College Republicans. That day actually was the same day that Richard Spencer had been punched in the face. That same day, I actually was maced by someone while I was talking to several students after the protest that BAM had held there was over. Like, no one was even around, and I was talking to like two students of color who were just asking me about my ideas, and I'd been talking to them for about an hour, and some guy runs out of nowhere and kind of maces me on the side of my head. He didn't get me very good, and I just went into the bathroom, washed it off, and then came back and started talking to the guys again. But you know, this has been going on for a long time. And I actually did an interview with Rebel Media just a couple days ago at the very last event that they had held, the Fuck Antifa rally that was held in the park there. And this was something I mentioned that a lot of people don't realize, but all of this stuff actually goes back way, way further. Students for Democratic Society, which is just this Orwellian name for these people, which was, it was really just a communist front back in the 50s and 60s, were actually shutting down individuals like Arthur Jensen, who were studying race, identity, and IQ, and were looking at the inequalities between different races and individuals and whatnot. They were chasing him around at Berkeley. He was teaching at Berkeley at the time, and they had to move his classroom every week to avoid these people because they would come in there and they would protest. He had multiple events where they were shut down, just like the Milo event was. And so many of the people, especially what we call the alt-light, they're not even aware that their views on race have been shaped by censorship of the past, just like what's happening to their favorite personalities like Milo and many of these other alt-like people who've been shut down, even Charles Murray, individuals like him. There's a long history of censorship that has led to people having their views shaped by an educational system that is out of sync with reality, and it's out of sync because of this past censorship. And there was no internet back in the 50s and 60s in which people could see what was going on, and people could see and hear the ideas and the facts that weren't getting out because of that. So all of this has a very long history, and I think that it's coming back up now, and it's coming around again because of the internet. This is the great disruption that is being caused, almost like the same thing that happened when the printing press was created. It was just this big disruption in the system, and the printing press actually allowed for all these new facts and ideas to get out and really change the world. We're seeing the same thing again. We're seeing, perhaps you might call it, the second great disruption or something like that. where the internet's changing everything, there's finally starting to be an on-the-ground pushback against these false narratives that have been propagated because of past censorship. And these individuals who, you know, these, I almost want to call them teachers' pets, these people who just believe everything they're told and are completely uncritical of anything, who would essentially be the same people several hundred years ago, you know, burning people at the stake. These people are, you know, using violence to try to protect this false narrative. They think they're doing something good, and they're really not. And they're just these uncritical people who can't think for themselves and just become so angry and irritated that they can't even, you know, they can't come up with responses or good logical answers. So they're just using violence to silence people who are actually speaking truth. And so this has a very long history. And going from the UC Davis event to then the Berkeley event, I think that's what really caught everyone's attention, was the Milo Berkeley event.
And also, Nathan, don't forget the, remember the Seattle, sorry to interrupt there, but Seattle, where the shooting happened too, right? It spiraled out of control there. And it was basically, you know, all the way leading up to the election of Trump. And then, you know, from the, after the inauguration and forward, they, Antifa and all these other communist groups have just gotten more and more emboldened, as I guess to a certain extent they feel that they're kind of losing the grip on the narrative of the culture. And as you say, the only way that they can kind of fire back at this is really to just lash out in violence and offer no answers back in return. But I think that the Seattle one was very, really a milestone, if you will, as well. But this was, when was it? That was January 23rd. And then shortly after was the first Berkeley event. It was February, I believe.
The Seattle thing was strange too, because not only were they rioting, someone was shot there, and the media was trying to pitch it as if, I think they were trying to pitch it as if it was like, you know, these violent Trump people are shooting people. And it was like actually an Antifa guy who attacked. I can't remember. Was it another like Antifa guy or something like that?
Yeah, I think it was someone believed someone was a racist. So he shot him. Right. And, and it turns out he was just like one of theirs. It's basically their own paranoia makes them turn on themselves, you know.
So. It was very strange. It was like this Antifa guy with a shaved head who like went and grabbed this other guy and was like shaking him.
Yeah.
And so they were trying to portray this as and the more they do this, I think the more the mainstream trying to maintain that narrative, the more everything's just slipping through their fingers, because people are seeing through it. And all it takes, I think, is one or two lies for people to see one or two lies exposed by the mainstream to where they just they tune it out. So this is also, I think all of this has been in a way very positive. But yeah, there was the Seattle incident that occurred. And then there was the Berkeley thing. I actually, that day, I went to Berkeley that evening with a number of people. I thought that we would, even if it got shut down, which I was pretty positive it would, I figured I'd still have a little bit of time to talk to some people, just like I did at the UC Davis event, which is actually very successful. We ran into a number of individuals who knew who I was, had heard about Identity Europa. We had a lot of interest. We handed out promo cards. So even though the event got shut down, it was actually still very successful. So I went to this event, and by the time I had gotten to it was right when, literally right when they lit the generator on fire. And, you know, we kind of walked up on the back of the crowd, and I saw this fire coming up. I thought they had lit a tree on fire because I was looking kind of through the tree, and then I realized it was something in the center of Sproul Plaza, again the exact same place where me and Richard were at literally a year ago, and that actually has a monument to free speech in the center of the plaza. Like there's this big circle in the center of the plaza, this big plaque that says like anyone who stands here can speak freely, you know, so on and so forth. That's literally where they lit the fire.
Yeah.
And so we're walking on the back of this crowd, and there's nothing but Antifa around. They're waving their little flags. And it was really funny because I remember hearing someone screaming, "We did it." And that meme popped into my head where it's like, "We did it, Patrick," the SpongeBob meme where it's like, "We did it, Patrick, we saved, you know, our town or whatever, and everything's on fire. And kind of people have changed that meme to make fun of Antifa. That popped into my head, and I was like, man, these people, this is the most like murderous thing. I like, you could smell just this murderous atmosphere. These people were out for blood. And I told my guys, I was like, let's go. Nothing good can come of being here at this point. We need to leave. We were walking away. I was talking to my guys, and I was like, you know, I was like, dude, I don't know the people that went there that didn't know who Antifa were. It's going to be bad. And I was right. As on my drive home, I was, you know, we were kind of listening in and watching video of what was going on, and of just, you know, we were watching that video of that guy being laid out in the street, being hit with a shovel or whatever it was. And people were just, he was just, you know, his body was lifeless. It was bad. It was really bad. And, it was very tragic. And I think it got the nation's attention and really put Antifa on the map. The good thing, though, is that obviously Antifa now has a PR problem. And I think the left in general has a PR problem because of all this. So that was, I think, what really, you know, woke up a lot of people to Antifa and to the reality that we're facing today, and also led to these other demonstrations in Berkeley. The funny thing is that none of these other demonstrations in Berkeley at the park would have occurred had they just let Milo do his thing. I mean, we wouldn't even be talking about this anymore.
That's right.
And again, this has just been a PR nightmare for the left and for Antifa, to the point where, you know, and we'll talk about this coming up, where the whole incident that occurred with me, people are literally singing praises over the incident that happened with me and the brawl and whatnot. So, I mean, this is to the point where like normal people just despise Antifa and hate Antifa. So that's very good for us, very bad for them. And it's also very enlightening to people. And it gives us a platform and an opportunity to talk about our narrative and why it is that Antifa is doing what they're doing, and why they're wrong. In fact, there was some video of Moldy Locks and her boyfriend at another rally, just talking about, and she's literally, her and her boyfriend are literally like the caricature of what you would expect these people to be, when asked basically, you know, what they're protesting. She's like topless with some band-aids, on her breasts. And she's like, yeah, because the patriarchy, and you know, she just throws out a couple buzzwords and doesn't really have any arguments. And there's been several videos that have just gone through step by step and debunked basically everything she said. She went ahead and talked about the gender pay gap, which is a known hoax. And so, you know, these people really just aren't doing themselves any good at this point. But that's what led up to all this. So I would say after that event, there was the protest. So a free speech protest was held at the park. It wasn't at the college. It was at a park that's probably just, I don't know, half a mile away from the college. And it's pretty much the main park in the city, a very famous park. And that's where Stickman kind of had his rise to fame. And I actually would have gone to the event, but I had already had plans to. I was actually on the East Coast at that time and heard about it like 2 days prior. Otherwise, I would have actually been at that one as well. But they got violent again, and people started fighting back. And some of the people who had come, Stickman was one of them, came ready to fight back against these people because the police were not stepping up. They were not doing their jobs. Yeah. Same with, I mean, and it starts with UC Davis. They weren't doing their job there. I watched them they really weren't trying to get involved and arrest the people who were picking up barriers and throwing them. They could have easily arrested those people and dragged them off. The crowd wasn't that big to where they couldn't have handled it. And so that emboldened them. And then at Berkeley, they further just stood down and allowed them to keep doing what they're doing. And a lot's coming out now as far as all this goes, with the mayor actually, as far as on his Facebook page, he's friends with BAM that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
This violent group by any means necessary, who has talked about using violence, force, and intimidation to get their way and to silence any dissent.
Do you think, sorry to interrupt, Nathan, but do you think that he has influence over the choices of the police department, that's on some level? Because first I was kind of suspecting maybe the cops is just standing down to kind of see who, like, I guess, gets violence and then go in after that and start arresting people and things like this. Because I remember the live coverage that we did of the first event where Falarca was attacking some of those people. That was a particular violent one, of course. A lot of people got stabbed on that event. But the cops were even inquiring actually from us afterwards, asking, do you have any additional footage to see who was involved in these kinds of things? So I was thinking maybe they're just kind of waiting this out to see, I don't know, dropping the guard to see who like does something and then going afterwards and do it. But it doesn't seem like it. The last few events at Berkeley, not much have come out of it, right? Not many arrests, actually.
Well, if you look back at the Sacramento event, which you at Red Ice actually were covering live, it took them about 8 months. It took the cops, the highway patrol, about 8 months to do the entire investigation. They have to comb through a lot of video. They have to talk to, I mean, when you're dealing with a riot with 300 plus people, there's a lot of people to try to interview and to try to track down. And that takes a very long time. So I do think there is an investigation. I think we'll probably hear about, this isn't going to be over for a very long time. There are perhaps be people charged almost maybe 9 months to a year plus from now out of this riot and out of the first riot that occurred at the park, even with Stickman and stuff.
Yeah.
It takes a very long time to do this. Now, to be fair, which is something I try to do as an objective as possible. American police aren't really used to dealing with this. This is something that's been going on in Europe for a very long time, but it's not something that's happening. I don't think we've seen this much widespread, civil violence since perhaps when I was a kid back in the 90s with the Rodney King riots. We haven't really seen this level of mass civil unrest since then. And to be fair, now, I mean, obviously they should still be ready for this stuff, but they might not have been ready for it. And they might still be trying to figure out how to go about handling these situations in the future. Is it better for them to just stand by and film everything in the future? I personally think that's a horrible idea. And I think that the very last event from earlier this week, the event where Ann Coulter was supposed to speak, but she did not come and people went there anyways, they actually did their job that day. And they actually kept the Antifa separate from us. And they actually were unmasking Antifa. And they did
Auburn
that at
too.
The Auburn event.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Look at what they were very professional there. No one with a mask could come in. I just don't get it. I mean, if you walk in covered like that, you know you're going to be up to no good. You can actually get away with really hurting someone, even maybe killing someone and not being identified. I mean, that's a serious issue. And that's why they should immediately say, you know what, if you're going to be here, you're not going to be able to cover up. It's really that simple. But the cops in the liberal California, you know, is very different than the kind of cops we have in Alabama, you know?
Yeah, they used these laws way back in the 60s. These unmasking laws were passed in the first place in many of the states in the South because of the Klan. So there is no reason why these same laws shouldn't apply to Antifa. And I don't know if it's a matter of, different states have different laws in regards to this. Maybe you guys could get someone on who is law enforcement and knows a little bit more about, the masking laws and stuff like that. But, you know, there really is no reason why these laws, at least in the states that these laws are applied to, cannot be used against Antifa. And that would really cripple, in a way, their ability to continue to do what they're doing. That's part of the whole black bloc tactic. Everyone wears black. Everyone wears the same thing. And that way they can't be identified. It's still funny, though, because with the technology, and I've been saying this recently, I would love to perhaps this summer when I have a little bit more time, I'm not in college anymore and not so swamped. I really like to talk about this because I really truly believe the black bloc is an outdated tactic. And it was a tactic that was created long before the internet, long before everyone had a cell phone with just excellent video quality. I don't believe that this tactic is going to be effective in the sense like it used to be. It still will be effective in a way, and they're still going to do it. But I truly believe now that it won't be as effective because the cops will be able to come from behind afterwards, look at the video, trace these people down, and arrest them. And I think that's going to be, over the long run, very demoralizing. To Black Bloc participants and Antifa. Believe it or not, it's a very small community. What happened in D.C., the Black Bloc rally in D.C. where like 200 Antifa were rallied up and arrested, that was very demoralizing to them. But if you look at the arrest records, those people flew in from across the country. Exactly. Most of them did not live in D.C. No. So it is a very small amount of people who are extremists, who are involved in this, and they are going to become demoralized and their ability to operate will become more difficult as these individuals are charged with these crimes, as they are put in prison, because many of these individuals that are willing to go out and use this type of violence, they're also, for the most part, usually the organizers of these events. So once these individuals start being charged with these crimes, it's going to cripple their ability to organize events. Their main organizers are going to get taken out. It's usually the other people at the event who aren't getting as violent, but are kind of just standing around and making the violence possible for the others. I think a great example of this would be the ULOC professor. Who kind of sneaks behind a couple people, smacks that guy in the head, as you can see right here, and just sneaks back into the crowd. These are the high agency individuals who are willing to go there and willing to go all the way. And it would not surprise me one bit if this guy was a main organizer. He's a college professor. He's got high agency. This is a guy that wants to make things happen. Whereas a lot of the other people, they kind of are generally on board, but they're not really looking to use violence, but they're kind of there because they agree with the other people in the block who are using violence. So I really truly believe that this is, in a way, an outdated tactic. I think it's really important for us to push law enforcement to charge these people, to push the government to essentially use laws that are already on the books and apply them to this group. There's been a lot of talk recently. There's a petition going around. I would urge everyone to sign it. It's a White House petition petitioning the White House and Congress to essentially label Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. They fit the very definition of a terrorist organization. I mean, terrorism is essentially violence in order to attack political opponents. So there is no reason these individuals either can't be there. They could be labeled a couple different things. They could be labeled a domestic terrorist group, and the Freedom Act I think that the Orwellian Freedom Act could be used against them, against the leadership. There could also, to be honest, they could also be labeled a criminal syndicate, which was something I had actually heard a YouTube vlogger talking about. And Stixenhammer, I think is his name. I want to give him a shout out for that. But he actually said they could be labeled a criminal syndicate And the RICO Act would apply to these people. There is no reason why the government cannot swoop in right now and basically just arrest their leadership and their organizers based off of everything they've done. They advocate on their websites violence. They advocate intimidation. They've gone to these things and used violence. Everything about these people fits all everything that's on the books right now. Why they're not doing this, I'm not sure. My only guess really is that, and I've heard this before, is political strategy.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon for political leaders to allow opposition groups to continue their violence in order to keep themselves in power. And that's just something I'm speculating on. But I mean, I could definitely see Trump doing that, this being good for him and this further delegitimizing the left so they don't go after them. So I don't know what's happening, but these people could easily be taken out very quickly under existing law.
I think, Nathan, that we have to get a little conspiratorial here because you know, there has been cases in the past. I actually remember this in Sweden too. George W. Bush was actually in attending an EU meeting. This was in Gothenburg, the second largest city in Sweden, and the whole town was basically just smashed to bits. The main drag, the main avenue in Gothenburg. All these antagonizers were flown in from like Germany and other European countries. And there was speculation whether or not, again, the cops stood down or allowed this to happen. There is a famous case out of Quebec, and the only reason they were forced to admit it is because they were caught so red-handed, where the most violent aspects of the protesters was actually cops themselves. And the Quebec police afterwards were forced to admit, yeah, we went undercover. People were zooming in on the shoes of the police officers. And then when they made a fake arrest of these, antagonizers, they had the same shoes. You could see the under the sole and stuff. We'll play the footage over this that shows that. But what I'm getting at, Nathan, is that I think that to some degree, there can be political use out of situations like this when you have increasing polarization. I mean, because I'm actually very worried still in terms of how the system that we have in place, our governments and everything else are very anti-European, anti-white system, that they will use laws potentially that will be coming to place to clamp down on extremism and, these kinds of things that eventually we won't actually be able to voice our opinions and stuff because they will have terrorism clauses in place which will prevent us from organizing or even going out onto the streets. So I have a suspicion that somehow they might be, at least in California, letting up on this to somehow get it to a point where it's so bad that they try to legislate against it. I don't know. What's your hunch about this?
Well, COINTELPRO, I think, was a great example. And there's another book. I wish I could remember it off the top of my head, but it actually showed that stuff like that is still going on. And this book came out maybe 4 or 5 years ago. There's a long history of government involvement with basically further getting involved with radical groups and then getting the people involved worked up into the point where they become extremists, which is basically they start using violence and stuff like that. I think there was a really good example of them doing that with the Klan back in the 60s. And yep. They got a bunch of people riled up and yep. Even helped them with making a bomb that blew up a black church that killed 5 people. So there is a long history of that. And also there's a video floating around that I've seen that actually looks at some of the video clips of the explosives that go off during the Battle of Berkeley, the round 3, which was the one I was at, that some of these explosives, and they are not exploding like M80s. They look like they're, perhaps concussion grenades or something like that.
Flashbangs, I think surprised. Someone said,
Yeah.
Yep.
I would not be surprised, and who knows if that's what's going on. That's what's happening. And we can't act as if the system doesn't benefit from the everything that's going on, from the mass immigration and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I it wouldn't surprise me. The people that are in power, everyone, basically virtually everyone in Congress, left or right, are there because they have big donors who enjoy having this mass immigration so they can flood the country with cheap wage labor. And they don't want this to stop. I mean, Ann Coulter was going to speak on immigration. That was what she was going to talk about.
So there's
definitely tons of evidence showing that the police in not only in America, but in multiple countries have been involved with this stuff in the past. And I think that it would definitely be fair to be very open to the fact that they might have had some involvement in this as well.
Yeah, exactly. So keep that in mind, everyone, and be vigilant and suspicious, and don't just kind of believe what the state and the government says. Inherently, they see us as an enemy, I think, and we have to keep that in mind. So we have to be wary of how they use this. But Nathan, before we get too deep into kind of the deeper analysis of what it is that's going on, let's just kind of deconstruct a bit of what it was that actually happened at Berkeley, where, of course, you had your encounter with Moldy Locks, as she'd been come to be known as, and set the stage for us a little bit of what actually happened prior to this video now that everyone's seen, and they just basically came out, oh my God, you know, he hit a woman and all this stuff. What happened prior to this? Tell us a bit about it.
So we arrived with probably about 25 to 30 Identity Europa members, and we actually got there very early. We knew that Antifa would be there early. We wanted to go because we understand how important it is for individuals to be able to engage in public dialogue and public speaking about ideas, because if these people who aren't even that radical don't have a chance to talk, then we definitely aren't. So we wanted to go there. We wanted to make sure that the event was safe and the attendees were safe. There were a lot of older people there. In fact, at the event where I'll call it the Battle of Berkeley 2, which is the one with Stickman. At that event, there was probably like a 70-year-old man who had been sprayed in the face and was lying on the ground. We wanted to make sure that these older individuals and whoever else wanted to attend would be safe. So we got there several hours early just to do that. And even then, we actually got word from someone who was already at the park that Antifa had showed up even like an hour or so earlier than they thought we thought they would be. So we rushed over there immediately. And by the time we got there, I think there were only a couple groups around at the park, but there was basically a kind of space in between where counter protesters were supposed to be and where the actual rally was supposed to be. And there's video of this, you can see it right now. Essentially, these guys just march through, these Antifa just walk through the barricades, trample over it and just go on to the other side, just trying to intimidate the people there. And so we got there shortly after that. And as we got there, the people who were already there at the park, the few people who were there, were just cheering. They were exuberant to see 25 young, healthy, strong individuals there to help them with the event. And so then from there, it kind of just, there wasn't much going on for, I would say, another hour and a half until the event was about to take place. And we had some guys, they were out just holding up a banner. We were kind of getting some chants going and stuff like that. And on both sides, on both the counter protesters as well as on the actual free speech rally, people were kind of trickling in on both sides for about an hour. And then after about an hour, Antifa, as both sides built and people started kind of shouting at each other across that little barrier, essentially what happened was Antifa threw like an M80 into the crowd. And so basically individuals there retaliated. As a result, M80s are very dangerous. In fact, you can see in this clip right here that, an M80 blew up right next to a guy's foot. And you can see him, I mean, his ankle, his foot basically got blown up. And he got a lot of shrapnel or whatever from that. And you can see he's in a lot of pain. I mean, these things are outlawed in many states. And they're outlawed because they can blow your hand off. They can blow your foot off. They can make you go deaf if they blow up by your face. Some of them were exploding in the air. So these things are very dangerous. And the Yeah, attendee goers essentially retaliated every time this happened. And things just eventually devolved from there. Antifa was throwing cans of soda. They were throwing bottles. They were throwing rocks. They were throwing bricks. They were even at one point throwing bagels when they ran out of things to throw. And I couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. We took a picture and I tweeted it out just because it was, you know, so ironic that, you know, these anarcho-communists, which is essentially an entire philosophy that has a history of essentially manifesting from the Jewish community, that they would be throwing bagels at us. So it was it was just you know, ironic in a way that they were throwing bagels at us. But they just spent hours throwing things at us, shooting fireworks at us, throwing M80s at us, and it got to a point where the cops just left. The cops just completely abandoned us to continue fighting these people off. And they did what it's kind of a tactic that they do. They've got one guy with a flag, which is their black and red flag. And everybody kind of follows the guy who has the flag. And the park was basically was in the middle of it, was surrounded by a street. And so it's kind of just a big island. And what they did was they started circling the park, trying to kind of stretch out our lines so that essentially they could rush from another direction. They could stretch us out thin enough and essentially, you know, rush us from the side. And as they're circling around this park, they just kept throwing bottles, kept throwing fireworks. Some of the people that were retaliating and trying to push back in self-defense essentially were getting dragged into the block and were just getting beaten senseless. Here's a clip, like a clip right here that you can actually see me, the one you're playing right now. I'm actually just sitting there taking care of an individual. He must have been in his 60s or something. We had pulled him out of the block. We had just dragged him out of the block. His eyes were rolling in the back of his head. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know if he got kicked in the head or what, but, you know, I was just basically for about two and a half hours, not engaging, but running along behind what was happening and helping people out. We knew that it was going to get violent because Antifa, that's their entire purpose, is to get violent, to shut things down. And so we had a guy with a med bag there, and we were going around basically patching people up. There was one individual that had a split. He was probably like 60 as well, had a big gash right here, probably needed about 6 stitches. And we patched him up. We were just going around trying to help people out who were kind of pushing back against this black bloc as they continued to attack the group. And so this happened probably for about an hour. Probably about 2.5 hours. They kept just circling the park, and eventually they started realizing that more of the people who were there for the free speech event, who had kind of stayed out of it for a while, were starting to get involved. They were starting to get sick of it. They're like, these people aren't just going to keep attacking us like this. And more people started getting involved to the point where our numbers just about matched theirs. And so they finally started kind of retreating up the street a little ways. They started realizing they were getting surrounded at the place they were at, which was kind of between the park and I think what is like the it's not a police station, but it's like a civic center or maybe a courthouse or something like that. And they realized they were kind of getting spread thin. And so they started moving back up the street. And they moved back up the street, and we all kind of followed them up the street to ensure that the people who were at the park, if they wanted to leave the event, they would be able to do so safely, because it's very common for Antifa, as these events are dispersing, to pick off people, to wait till you get, you know, 2 or 3 people by themselves and to just mob them with 20 people and just kind of like they did at the first Berkeley event, the Milo Berkeley event. They got these guys who were by themselves and just laid them out in the street. That guy could have easily been murdered. So we kind of formed a line and pushed them up the next block and held that intersection right there for as long as we could. Now, right before that happened, basically there was a guy who was holding a sign, and he was holding a sign that said, I think it said, like, this is what liberalism looks like. There's the picture right there. You're just bringing it up. Yeah, it says like, this is what liberalism looks like. And he was walking up to the block and he was holding it and just basically just letting them assault him, essentially, to prove his point, to show that these were the people who came here to use violence. And they hit him in the head several times with a stick. And essentially, he just kept going back. He was bleeding all over his face, and he kept going back and just, go ahead, hit me. That's what you're here to do. You're here to use violence. Use it. Show the world what you are. And there was another individual who had come all by himself. He had come there just like we had to make sure that someone would stand up to these bullies. And upon the last time of this guy holding a sign getting smacked in the face, and he just had his entire head split open, this guy tried to kind of be a hero and grab the guy who was doing it and try to essentially say, like, no, you can't just assault people without consequences. Like, we're gonna fight back, we're gonna use self-defense. And he ended up getting dragged in like 20-30 feet into the block. And essentially, he was being beaten with sticks. He finally managed to grab one of the sticks he was being beaten with and start fighting back. The guy, luckily, was a pretty strong, sizable guy. And we had to rush into the block and create a hole in order to get to him. And there was guys rushing in. Stick Man rushed in to create a hole. Essentially, he was one of the guys. And it literally took us probably 15 to 20 seconds to get to that guy before we were able to create enough of a hole to get him out. And by the time I got to him, altright.com just wrote an article about this. By the time I got to him, he was on the ground in a headlock. And right before I was able to get to him, one of the Antifa came up and kicked him right in the head. And if you know anything about mob violence and riots, the last place you want to be in one of these things is on the ground, because you can get killed very easily by getting kicked in the head and getting stomped out. And so right before I was able to get to him, someone kicked him in the head, and I pushed the guy who was on top of him off of him. I don't know if it was a guy or a girl. I couldn't tell. these people, it's their the soy and their diet and
yep.
everything.
Difficult to tell. I agree.
Makes it hard to tell. Yep. But I ran up, pushed the guy off of him, was able to get the guy back to safety, and that was when we basically formed back up. Along, everybody kind of pushed back, and we formed up along that intersection again. Just to hold the line and to, make sure that, again, anyone who was at the park would be able to leave. So it was at that time where, again, they kept throwing bottles at us. You can see, you showed a picture earlier. Maybe if you can show it again, there's me, there's Stickman, there's a bunch of other people out there just lined up, facing off with these people. They're throwing bottles at us. Oh, there it is right there. Yeah. You can see the glass just coming by my face as it's getting thrown.
Yeah, was that?
At us.
Do you remember that? Was and that just passing like from
that was,
the camera
yeah, that
angle
was right
towards
by
you?
Us. Yeah, yeah. Wow. No, that was right by us. So yeah. These people, and it was all coming from that same area where Moldy Locks and her boyfriend and all these people were. That's where it was coming from. That's where the glass bottles were being thrown. There's some other videos where you can actually see the bottles landing, and they're coming from that corner. Right there. Yep. There it is. So they were throwing bottles at us and stuff like that from that corner, and basically hiding behind their people. And it eventually, someone from Antifa's side threw this, like industrial, strength, like smoke grenade. And I think that was one of the things that was covered in the video earlier, talking about possibility of police involvement, undercover cops or FBI or whoever. That smoke grenade was kind of like a heavy duty one. Not sure where that came from. But essentially what happened was it created, the wind was blowing towards Antifa, and it blew back on them. It blew back towards them, and it freaked them out or something. We just held the line right there, and it freaked them out, and I guess they just took off running or something like that. And I think it was about that time everybody kind of just looked to their left and their right and realized, like, hey, these guys are running away. Like, you know, we need to pursue to push these people even farther away. And that's when I think kind of all hell broke loose, was we started walking forward, and not all the Antifa ran away. Some of them stayed. And as we were walking forward, I remember a guy ran up and like swung on the guy to my left. And I saw him do that. I went to kind of just push him away from it. But the guy he swung on essentially swung back. And I think actually landed one on the guy, basically like right as I was going to push him. And I kind of stumbled over him. And then I stumbled over him onto the sidewalk. And someone took a swing on me. I think it was actually with a bottle or something. You really have to slow it down to find it. But I kind of moved back, and then it was then that I first saw Moldy Locks. She was wearing a mask over her face. She was wearing a hat, and she was swinging around this bottle. And so I just went right for her, and that was the first engagement that I had seen her. And at that point, I kind of started to lose my bearing as to what was happening. These things get crazy. A lot of people have never been in riots before, so they sit there and watch the video and are like, oh, well, you know, you could have done this or you could have done that. These things are crazy. If you've ever been
fast,
in one,
very fast.
It moves so fast. Yeah. You've got people coming around everywhere, blindsiding people, getting hit in the side of the head or the back of the head. And so I was essentially just looking around, making sure a bunch of people rushed forward at that time. And the only Antifa I could see were already being engaged by people. I'm not gonna jump on somebody who's already, you know, basically getting what they had coming to them. So you know, I'm looking around for other people, and you can kind of see me just looking around, like, hey, is there anyone running up from behind? And kind of through that crowd that I was behind, through the the Jesus, the guy wearing the Jesus Will Judge You sweatshirt. I see Moldy Locks running back in. Now, what you can't see from that video, you can kind of see there's a guy to my right there. He's got one of those skull masks on, and you see him facing the left side of the screen. Antifa had run up. They still had a lot of people on that side of the street, and they had run up from that side, and Moldy Locks was at the front of that charge. So she had left the entire engagement and ran back in and ran back in towards us. And that's what I had seen, was I saw a whole group of people running towards that corner from that side of the screen, a whole group of Antifa running in. And that's why I was kind of jumping and moving in between people. And Moldy Locks was the first person, and she had ran up behind some of these guys. And I thought she was going to blindside them again. You know, and again, I kind of knew it was the same person because I remembered the dreads, and I kind of saw Moldy Locks like right as that guy kind of moved in front of me. You can kind of see him if you slow it down. He moves in front of me, and then I kind of move around him, and that's when we just come face to face for a split second. And I just swing because I know it's, and I've been in situations like this before, it's swing or get swung on, and you don't have time. If you hesitate for a split second, you're getting knocked out. And I knew that was the same individual that was swinging the bottle around earlier. So that's basically what happened. And after that, I was like so discombobulated. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know who Antifa was. And I was just like, I got to move out of this general area because I don't know where where anybody is, what's going on. I don't know who's around me. And so you kind of see me move off at the very end of the video, just trying to get out of there and gain my bearing again.
Yeah.
And then from there, I actually went up to the front of the crowd where everyone moved down the street. I actually rushed up to the front of that crowd as well, because I knew that everyone was still down there. So that's basically, that's really the whole story about what happened and everything leading up to this. And unfortunately, as we saw, what happened was you had outlets like CBS and all these other mainstream outlets who basically just took that one clip and, you know, tried to demonize me, tried to demonize everyone who was there. Oh, it was the free speech people who were getting violent. And what's funny about this, too, is they didn't try to pit it as free speech versus, anti-dialogical groups. But they tried to make it a pro-Trump versus an anti-Trump group. And that wasn't true. There were actually a lot of liberals who went to this event because they had seen what was happening, and they weren't having it. So, as well as the fact that most of us in the alt-right were basically off the Trump train by that
right.
point, because of the whole Syria issue,
yeah.
and the fact that he's been backing away from everything else that all the other campaign promises he made. So they took that one clip, they took it out of context, they ran with it, they didn't make any corrections or any follow-up pieces covering up everything that could happen. Now, I know this is the first time I've really come out and just done a step-by-step walkthrough of everything that happened, but there were people within 24 hours all over the internet countering this narrative, showing the pictures on their YouTube channel, showing the video of her swinging the bottle around. The mainstream could have easily written follow-up articles covering all that. They refused to, obviously, because they're pushing out a false narrative that they want. And it was great that I'm actually really relieved that we live in a day and age, one, where there's that many people with video and people taking pictures around that are covering this stuff, and that there is a means to distribute to the masses this information. Because if it weren't for that, I'd probably be getting hammered right now as far right. as all this goes continually in the media. In fact, there's a famous picture that occurred from the civil rights movement in which this cop is holding a baton and he's holding it way up in the air, and there's like a black man on the ground. And that was like circulated back in the civil rights movement to make it, oh, look at these brutal cops and whatnot. Well, years later, they tracked down the cop, and essentially what happened was his baton had been pulled out from him. He chased the guy back down, got the baton back, and as he yanked it back from the guy, he pulled it up in the air. And they snapped the picture, and they ran with the story of police brutality.
Yeah.
So
you saw that with the migrants. Remember the migrants on the train track? It looked like the cop had shoved them down, and they were standing above them when it was he who dragged, you know, clambered onto his own wife and fell backwards. They do this all the time. They love just doing that cutout piece to spin their version of what they want to have done. And of course, we the alt-right is probably their biggest target right now. To be honest, they are completely scared shitless of the momentum that we have right now. And I think that they're taking every opportunity that they can to take these events to try to delegitimize us. But as you say, as soon as we get the footage, as soon as we see what really happens, we are in most cases vindicated, and we're completely in the right in terms of the reactions and everything else. And that, you know, that we were in a defensive position, and basically the results to the mainstream media siding with violent communist, you know, antagonizing groups, which should tell us something. It should tell us what kind of climate we're in, and it should also tell us the fact that, you know, they will stand against us no matter what. And we know what the score is by now, Nathan. You know, we know that this is what they're going to do, and they're going to use, they're going to cheat, they're going to lie, they're going to use all kinds of tactics that they can to try to put us in a bad light. You know, and this was just another example of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But one of the things I want to point out is this is also an example of the power of the internet and how they are just losing complete control. If you look at any of the articles, the CBS article, as well as the YouTube video they put out, if you look at any of the articles that have comment sections, and that's obviously why a lot of them don't, is because several years ago they started taking them out. I think BuzzFeed was one of the ones that did that. And a bunch of other mainstream news outlets started taking the comment section out. If you look at the comment section on any of these YouTube videos or any of the ones that are trying to make Moldilocks look to be some victim, and something we hadn't even covered was the fact that she is a confirmed member of Antifa. Remember, this is an international terrorist organization whose sole purpose is to use violence, intimidation, and force to shut down political opponents. There's pictures of an Antifa flag in her trailer or something like that that were pulled from her Facebook page. She made statements as far as her entire purpose of going to the event was to, first she said she was going to disrupt it and she was going to get 100 Nazi scalps. So she went to the event to attack people, in her own words, to use violence and force and intimidation to shut down the event with her international terrorist organization. And when asked by Tim Pool, the guy's like an award-winning journalist who actually managed to interview her, when he asked her essentially what she thought about her side throwing bottles, M80s, and other stuff like that at the people at the free speech rally, her response was, "Well, the revolution isn't going to be fucking easy." That was her response.
That's right, lady. And she got to feel that firsthand.
Yeah, that's how these people feel. Yeah. These people are thugs. These people are terrorists. These people need to be exposed. And I think it's amazing that these people are getting the exposure that they deserve. They truly do. They truly have a PR problem on their hands. The times are truly changing. And I tell you what, I went back to this fuck Antifa rally that was being held in Berkeley at the same park, and it was being held as a result because Ann Coulter decided not to have her event because the Berkeley the staff at Berkeley was essentially doing everything they could to shut down the events. They were basically obfuscating by not providing them with a room and saying, "Oh, we can't hold it now. We'll hold it later in the semester." And doing everything they could to shut down the event. Now they're suing the school over this, but essentially they decided to cancel the event and just sue the school. Now, I think it was a bad idea not to come. I think they should have sued the school. I think that was a good idea.
Yeah.
But Richard Spencer and the alt-right showed how to handle these situations at Auburn. What they did was they got cops to enforce masking laws. They got a court injunction to ensure that they could make sure that the event would still be held. Basically, the courts forced the school to hold the event. And that's what they did. It doesn't look or appear from anything I've seen that they tried to do this. And I don't know why they didn't try to. And as well as we had built up all this momentum, I don't know why Ann Coulter didn't go to this event. There would have been so many people there to not only protect her and protect other people there. And it would have made such a huge statement that it would have been a huge victory for just right wingers in general, but also just for free speech in general. Anyone who believes in free speech, it would have been a big victory for her. So I don't know why she did this, but people decided to go anyways as a result of her not canceling the event. And the cops finally did their job. They finally did their job, and
this was like the one. This was like the one fight that broke out, and here cops shows up. 30 seconds or something. There they are right now. And as far as I know, that was one of the only violent encounters in Auburn, if I'm correct.
That was the only violent encounter I saw. I think there might have been one more that I heard about. I think maybe somebody got jumped by about four Antifa afterwards. Mm-hmm. I can't confirm that, but I think I heard something about that. But other than those two incidences, I mean, that's all things considered, that's reasonable. That's something can be maintained. Cops can maintain control. And beyond that, Ann Coulter, she's hired, I think Blackwater in the past or whatever they call themselves now. There's no reason they could not have done that at her event. The event itself was being sponsored by YAF and the Berkeley College Republicans, and YAF, their income, they have massive income and donations. I don't know what it is, but we get like a percentage of what they have flowing in, And there's no reason why, YAF couldn't have provided security if they didn't feel like the police were going to do their jobs. And if they thought that Berkeley police were going to stand down, they could have basically had, 30 individuals from like some private force like Blackwater, essentially maintaining peace and order, as well as all the people who would have been willing to show up and ensure that the event would have been held. So, yeah. Other than all that, though, when I went to that event, I had so many people coming up to me and thanking me. I had even non-white people coming up. I had an Asian lady, a black woman, all talking to me, individuals of Hispanic heritage saying, hey, thank you for what you're doing. I understand your views. And I know that, I may disagree a little bit on that, but you are not the animal they've made you out to be. And we know that. We know this is a lie. We're glad to see you back here. And we want to see you again at these things. Keep coming. Thank you for everything you're doing. And one lady said to me, a black woman said, it's about time white people started standing up for themselves.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, what we're doing is huge. And we're finally starting to make a breakthrough. People are realizing that these media campaigns and smears against the alt-right just aren't accurate. They're starting to see through it. And most of the alt-right, at least the rank and file, is completely on board with us and completely happy to have us there at their events and supporting them and whatnot. And to be honest, we would be happy to have them at our events. And so everything's changing. Politics are changing in this country. Politics are changing around the world. And you here at Red Ice are part of this great disruption that's occurring. And it's just amazing to be part of this. This is really, truly history being made.
It's the biggest battle that we've ever fought, I believe. This is monumental. And of course, if you're not part of it, what are you doing? You know, think about that. Because this is going to come to your doorstep, whether you want it or not at some point. And as we've seen, Nathan, I mean, we have been reminded in history of these very antagonistic groups once they get started. I mean, some people have made the comparison. This is like Weimerica. This is the Weimar Republic, and these are very antagonistic forces that are popping up again. And what's of course very interesting about this is that we know what side the media and the establishment are on, and in many cases, they're even the ones who are funding these groups. They're facilitating these groups. They're making sure that they are, bust into certain areas. But I think even despite that, the momentum of the people, as you say, that have access to right information and can look into these things for themselves and see the bigger picture of what it is that's happening. With all those things in mind, we're tipping the scales and things are turning in our direction. And that's why they're lashing out in violence. They don't have anything left anymore. There's no arguments left. They think the only way that they can shut us down is by violently fighting us, as the group goes by any means necessary. So I think that they're on the losing end,
Yeah, this is their last ditch effort. And if they cannot manage to acquire enough power and force and people willing to use violence, they've lost. They've lost because their narrative was false. And the only reason why their narrative managed to gain as much speed and traction and social currency was simply because of censorship of the past. So yes, we're on the forefront of this. And to be honest, I think the world's going to be a very different place in 5 to 10 years. And this is really going to be in a way kind of the final battle, in my opinion, over is truth going to prevail in the future or not? Because if this does not happen, I see a very harsh reality, not only for America, not only for the West, but I see a very harsh reality for the rest of the world.
I agree.
Truth must prevail. And if it does not, we're going to lose everything. We are going to lose all the hundreds of years, thousands of years of progress is going to be lost. So now is the time to make a stand. Now is the time to get out and do something. I think we're going to win. I'm an optimist.
There's no other option.
I'm a pessimistic optimist, but I truly believe we're going to win. These people are destroying any capital that they had. People are waking up left and right. It's happening so quick. We've been watching it just over the last 2 years. Imagine how many people are going to be woke. Woke. I love using that term. imagine how many people are going to be red-pilled 5-10 years from now. It's going to be insane. I think things that we never thought possible are going to be made possible. And these people, these Antifa people, they're really just going to become losers that nobody wants anything to do with. I really see that happening. They're going to become the new outcasts, just like for a long time, people who had opinions on race that were similar to the alt-rights, how they had been marginalized. I see these people 5-10 years into the future being marginalized the same way across the board. They stink, both literally and metaphorically. They stink. Their narrative stinks, and there's nothing left for them. They don't have a leg left to stand on. They're losing the culture war. They're losing the arguments. They're losing everything. So I think this is it. This is the final push, and it's going to get worse. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. But we have to keep pushing. We're making massive gains. As far as social currency goes, and as far as ideas go, and just sheer numbers, we're making massive gains, and we have to continue to put up this fight.
Very good. All right, Nathan, we're going to take a short break here and then continue, do another quick segment. I want to talk about the deeper kind of roots of what it is that's happening right now. And also just talk a little bit about what other things we can do to fight back. But just quickly before we take a break, Nathan, just tell the audience about Identity Europa. Tell us what you guys are doing and how people can find out more info about you guys.
So Identity Europa is an organization I, as well as several other people, started about a year ago. It is an identitarian organization in America. We kind of followed the path of Generation Identitaire that started in France and then spread to many other European countries. We want to talk to people about race, about identity, about the effects of mass immigration, how that affects the culture, how that affects the political system. And we want to get our ideas out there. We want to change America as well as we want to change the world. So if you are a person of European heritage, if you want to get involved, you can go to identityeuropa.com. You can spell it the Europa. Usually we have it with EV. That's just kind of for aesthetics. You can spell it either way. You're going to find it. You can spell Europa with a V, with a U. It's going to pop up. Just type it into a search engine. Identity Europa, identityeuropa.com. We're on Twitter, at Identity Europa, and we're on Facebook. Come find us. Come follow us. Come get involved. We will do an interview with you, make sure you're kind of on board and understand really what's going on and what you're getting into. And we will help you get plugged in with people in your local area so that you can work with other people who are seeing the things you are, who have discovered these truths and are willing to find ways to push back so that we can bring about change in the institutions, whether they're academic or governmental, so on and so forth. We want to bring about real change and create a world that is more beautiful, one in which there is order and just a greater amount of harmony in our society. And we have to be realistic about that. We have to understand human nature, and you cannot just ignore human nature when you're building the foundation for your governmental systems and your body, your cultural institutions and whatnot. So just check us out, join us. We're doing amazing things. We're across the country, pretty much every major metropolitan area. We're there. Come find us.
All right. Very good. You have the website, ladies and gentlemen. We're just going to take a quick break right here. Going to continue and just chat a little bit more with Nathan. A lot of things I want to ask him about, both about some of the events. There was a couple of things, too, that happened afterward. Some of the people he managed to pull out and rescue, that actually made some testimonials online and whatnot. Put those up on YouTube. So that's pretty good stuff. And as usual, of course, media didn't cover any of that. So we'll talk about that and much more when we return after a short break. So stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back. Well, boys and girls, that is the first hour with Nathan D'Amigo. Thank you for watching or listening, however you get the show. We're going to take a short break in a few minutes here, and then we're going to continue with the second hour. That's what we do at this show. We don't have ads. We're our listener supported. We don't have, you know, commercial interruptions or commercial breaks or anything like that. We don't have sponsors. We are 100% independent. So that means we need your support to continue to be independent. That's the best way to support us. If you do anything, the best way is to sign up for a membership with us. That's really the best way to ensure that we can continue to do what we do. And, you know, I rarely go on about this, but the fact is we are in a tremendous pressure right now. We are in a crunch. We're basically at a point where we need to expand and step up our game and continue to turn Red Ice into what we know that it can become. But we cannot do that without your help. That's just the bottom line of it. We're out there every day. We're fighting. We have our names out there. We have our faces out there. We are under tremendous pressure. Do you understand how dangerous it is to do what we do in these times? You know, talking about the things that we do. I mean, we're not InfoWars. We are not the rebel. We don't go PC on certain issues and back out or cuck out. I mean, we try to hit you with the truth and go all the way and tell you the story as it really, really is. You know, talk about who it is that's displacing us. We're talking about what multiculturalism really is doing to our societies, what Islamic immigration is doing, what the problems of diversity really are, and that this is leading to chaos in Europe right now, and of course in America too, all around the West really, where the European diaspora exists, as it were. So we know what it is that we need to do. We are 100% dedicated to fighting this fight and being out there and being an outlet which basically provide something which no one else really does right now, frankly. We need to remain competitive. We need to remain out there and step up our game. And it was about a year ago since we started with the TV broadcasts and doing, you know, more videos and you know, video versions of our shows and stuff like this. And it's been great. We've grown tremendously. We have more, you know, people on our YouTube than ever. We have more people tuning in and listening and all that stuff. That's great. But the fact is, we need more members. We need more of you people to step up to the plate and support us and support what we are doing. We need more employees. We need to bring on more, you know, reporters that can basically help us cover all these things that's happening around in Europe and America and around the West. We need to basically expand our production. I mean, it's great, but there's so much more that we can do. We have so many ideas. We have a tremendous amount of you know, ideas just within our team, but we're too few. I mean, look at InfoWars. I heard just a couple of months ago, I think, he has 65 employees. We're not anywhere near that. Even The Rebel has like 19, I heard. Do you know how many people we are on this team? Do you know how much time I put into them? I live and breathe this. This is all I don't have a life. Most of the people working here at Red Ice, we don't have a life beyond this. We are 100% dedicated to making sure that people know what it is that really is going on right now with population replacement, with the mass migration agenda, with Muslim immigration, with all these interest groups that are working against us, with white privilege and all these lefty insanity policies and SJWs and everything else. We know what is going on here, and we are the people who are going to be out there and fighting and telling you what it really is that's going on and what's happening. We're going to give you the full story. We're not going to back down or cuck out. I mean, but the reality of the situation is that if you don't help us, if you don't step up to the plate, there we can't go any further. This is it. That's the limit. And we're not going to settle with that. It's just not the case. I mean, if you do anything at all, the thing that you can do is to help us out by getting a membership. It's great. I understand that everyone can be out there with their face and their name as we are. They will get fired. This is the pressure we're under in these times. And believe me, I know, because I'm experiencing this pressure firsthand myself. I mean, do you think I enjoy having my wife called a pin-up fascist by some slime balls at the New York Magazine writing about us and what it is that we're doing? Do you think we enjoy this or do this for leisure or for fun or take pleasure in the fact that we're, like, you know, slandered in these mainstream publications and papers all the time? Simply for pointing out the fact that, you know, the elite and the globalists are turning us into minorities in our own countries and basically talking against the insanity of cultural Marxism and lefty insanity. I mean, this is so sick. I mean, this is, God, I can't believe it's happening, to be honest. But it is. And we need to continue to point it out. We need to continue bring this information to people. We need to wake more people up. We need to basically expand in a way that we've never done before. And this year, this past year has been great, but is by far not enough. So as I said, I understand not everyone can be dedicated and working for the cause and helping out and all those kinds of things. But there are things you can do. And one of those things, the most primary thing actually you can do, is to help us out and to ensure that we can continue doing what we're doing and grow as well, right? So even if there's investors out there, people who have money to spend or want to, you can even pay salaries to people that we can bring onto the team directly so that you know that money goes to the right place. We're open to anything here. We need help. We need assistance. We need you to come aboard in that capacity and help us out. Make sure that we can continue. I mean, the situation is as worse as it's ever been. This is the battle of our lifetime. What are you going to do? Stand on the sidelines watching or just sitting in the comment fields complaining? Help the people out that are actually doing something and who are out there fighting. And we are the outlet that's going to be able to bring a lot of this stuff to people's attention. And with your help, we can expand. There's no end in sight. The sky's the limit. We have tons of ideas. And this is really the way to do it. There's no other way to go about this. So we need to grow. We need to grow this coming, 12 months or so here in a way that we haven't before. We need to show our enemies that we're capable. And we're not going to stagnate and just settle and say, oh, this is it here, but no further. We need a new studio space. We need to grow larger. We need to bring more employees where we are so we can continue to produce more, cover more, all that good stuff. You know how it is like. You know the game. So get involved and sign up for a membership with us. I hate plugging this, frankly. I rarely do it. I never do it. I'm very mellow. I never ask people anything. I never tell them what to do. But I'm doing that now, and I'm going to continue to doing that because I have a mission. I want this to grow. I want this to become something much more than it is today. And we can only do that with your help. That is just the reality of the situation. So please sign up, redicemembers.com. Go there right now, sign up for a membership. A membership is basically, if you go into an American hipster coffee joint, you pay $5 for a cup of coffee these days? That's basically what it is per month to support us, right? So sign up for a 3-month subscription. That's the lowest we have. We're up to 2 years, whatever works for you. But do go to redicemembers.com, sign up for a membership, help us out. We're going to continue to grow no matter what, but we need your help. Do you understand? We need your help. We need you to get involved. So I'm going to continue talking about this, and I'm going to make sure that you guys help us out, because that's really the only solution to this situation. We need to grow. We need to do it now. We need to have shit happen, okay? So we're going to continue with Nathan D'Amico on the other side of this break. Thank you so much for watching or listening, and we'll talk to you after the break. Take care.